turn to Proverbs 10 and verse 2. I'm going to cover at least one verse tonight, possibly two. We'll see how much time the first one takes. Proverbs 10:2 says, "Treasures of wickedness profit nothing, but righteousness delivereth from death." So we'll look at the first part of it. Treasures of wickedness profit nothing. And we'll start by defining what a treasure is. A treasure is, or treasure is, wealth or riches stored or accumulated, especially in the form of precious metals, gold or silver coin, hence in general, money, riches, wealth. And if you think about lost treasures or when a ship goes down and people go searching for it, you usually think of some chest that's full of gold and silver, right? That's what the definition says. So treasures of wickedness profit nothing. So the question would be, what are treasures of wickedness? And the Bible will actually define this for us, and that is that they are riches which are gotten by sinful means such as fraud and violence. Because the treasures themselves aren't wickedness. There's nothing morally evil or reprehensible about certain elements on the periodic table. Psalm 62 and verse 10. Remember, it's the love of money that's the root of all evil. It's not money that's the root of all evil. Psalm 62 and verse 10. It says, "Trust not in oppression, and become not vain in robbery. If riches increase, set not your heart upon them." And I would think that these two things there in that verse are connected. Oppression, robbery, and riches increasing. Because that's one way to increase your riches, to oppress people, to rob them. There's other ways to do it, honestly. But that's one way to do it. And if you're one that increases your riches by oppressing other people and by robbing them, then you ought to take heed to the second part. Because when riches increase, set not your heart upon them, because the Bible tells us elsewhere that they'll make themselves wings and fly away as an eagle toward heaven, especially if they were ill-gotten gain. I mean, all riches do that. Anybody that's ever invested in the stock market or in anything else, for that matter, knows how fast that can disappear. But yeah, if you got it through ill-gotten means, then you better not hold on to it too tightly, because it's going to be taken from you eventually. It also, treasures of wickedness are gotten through fraud, and we'll see that here in Micah 6, 10 through 13. So the first one there is more like physically taking somebody's stuff. This one is taking somebody's stuff through trickery or deceit. You're not physically, you know, robbing them, breaking into their house, but you're getting it through cheating, through dishonest means, yes. Micah 6, 10 through 13 says, "Are there yet the treasures of wickedness?" So there's the phrase that we're looking at. "Are there yet the treasures of wickedness in the house of the wicked, and the scant measure that is abominable? Shall I count them pure with the wicked balances and with the bag of deceitful weights?" This doesn't mean much to us today, balances and weights. But in those days, when you were going to sell something, you would weigh out the money on a balance. And you'd have weights that would, you know, you'd have a weight for an ounce or a shekel or whatever, and you'd put gold or silver on one side, and you'd put the weight on the other, and, you know, you could tell how much you had there. This is probably before coin, you know, money was coined and had the value of it specifically denoted. So that's how they would do it. Well, it's really easy to rip somebody off when you have a system like that, because you can just falsify the balances. You can either make the balance where they're just not balanced, or you can get weights that don't weigh what you say they weigh. Right? You could put a weight on there that says it you know, has an ounce marked on it, but it actually weighs 2 ounces, and you put the weight on there, and then the guy puts what he thinks is an ounce of gold, and you're like, nope, it's still up, and you keep throwing some more on there, and before you know it, it balances out, and he's like, huh, I could have swore that was an ounce, and well, apparently not. Well, so you could easily rip somebody off like that. And this is what the Lord's condemning. This is called treasures of wickedness. When you get money through means like that, you've done wickedness. "For the rich men thereof are full of violence, and the inhabitants thereof have spoken lies, and their tongue is deceitful in their mouth." See, this all goes together. Deceitful tongue in their mouth, telling you that this weighs a certain amount, that these balances have been regulated or whatever, and It's all just a big lie. Verse 13, therefore also will I make thee sick in smiting thee, in making thee desolate because of thy sins. So the Lord is going to punish these people that do this with sickness. And this is not the only time he's done that. Remember in 1 Corinthians 11, when he talks about the Lord's Supper and they had abused the Lord's Supper, and he said, for this cause many are weak and sickly among you, and many sleep. Right? The Lord had judged them with physical ailments because of their sin. So this says that treasures of wickedness profit nothing. So the people that are doing this thing here that we're reading about in Micah, they're not going to profit anything. Now, initially, they might, right? Because sin sometimes does appear to pay off for a while. But in the long run, it's not going to profit anything. To profit means to make progress, to advance, go forward, to improve, prosper, grow, or increase in some respect. We usually think of profiting in terms of money, but that's only a specific application of profiting. You can profit in many ways that wouldn't necessarily have to be money. Paul said he profited in the Jews' religion above many his equals, and he was a Pharisee of the Hebrew of the Hebrews, and you know, touching the law, blameless, and all those things. So he excelled in that religion. Now that might have got him some money too, but his profiting there wasn't primarily financial gain. But people that use ill-gotten ways to get treasures will not make progress in advance in the long run. And we'll see what happens to them here in Micah. This passage is a great explanation of Proverbs 10:2, of the first half of it anyway. So in verse 14, the Lord lists off, 14 and 15, lists off a bunch of different ways that is going to prohibit people that are dishonest in their dealings from profiting, from gaining any ground. So first of all, the man may get to eat. He may get food by these ill-gotten gains, but he's not going to be satisfied. Verse 14, the Lord says, thou shalt eat, but not be satisfied. So it's just not, maybe it's not going to be enough for him. He's going to eat, and he just still has this unsatisfied feeling that, you know, he just, maybe his conscience is plaguing him, or he just, you know, the eyes of man are never satisfied kind of thing. He's going to eat, but it's just not going to taste that good. And then he's going to be cast down by God, the second part of that verse. And thy casting down shall be in the midst of thee. Now, whether the Lord's going to physically cast him down, maybe cast him into a bed of sickness, like he said there, whether he's going to cast him down in spirit, so he's low and heavy and he's depressed, he's not able to enjoy his wealth. Because, you know, rich people get depressed too. We usually don't think so. We think, oh, you're rich. Why would you ever be depressed? Of course rich people get depressed. Why do you think so many celebrities kill themselves or get involved in drugs and alcohol and things like that? They got lots of money, but you know, they're not fulfilled. This guy will take hold of things, but he won't be able to keep them. So he's going to grab hold, but it's just going to slip out of his fingers somehow, some way. The third part of the verse. He says, and thou shalt take hold, but shalt not deliver. So he's not going to be able to get whatever he has taken hold of. He's not going to be able to deliver it back into his house, into his safe, into his, you know, into his bank account, whatever. He's somehow going to lose it. It's going to, you know, slip away one way or the other. And if he does end up taking it home, it's going to be stolen from him. The fourth part of the verse. And that which thou deliverest will I give up to the sword. So most of it you're not end up going to get. It's not going to make it home some way or another. And then whatever does get in your house, the Lord says, I'll deliver it to the sword. Meaning somebody's going to come in and rob him. Somebody's going to come in and forcibly take it from him. That's called reaping what you sown. You know, you stole it essentially from somebody else. Well, that'll happen to you. And then he'll sow seed in his field and he won't reap the harvest. Verse 15, the first part. Thou shalt sow, but thou shalt not reap. So he went out there, he falsified his balances, he made all kinds of money, he bought a bunch of seed, went and planted himself a big field, and the Lord sends a drought or, you know, a flood or something, and doesn't end up, you know, or squelching heat or something like that, and he doesn't end up reaping what he sowed. And then if his crop does yield produce, he won't be allowed to enjoy it. The second part of 15. says, thou shalt tread the olives, but thou shalt not anoint thee with oil, and sweet wine, but thou shalt not drink wine. So he's gonna get olives, but not gonna be able to make the oil. Or when he gets it, something's gonna happen to it. He's gonna make wine, but not be able to drink it. Solomon said, if I could remember, it's in Ecclesiastes, where he said, it's an evil to whom God has given, he's given all these things, but he gives them power not to eat of it. I think I can find it here. I know where it is on the page. Yeah, it's in Ecclesiastes 6 and verse 2. He says, a man to whom God hath given riches, wealth, and honor, so that he wanteth nothing. This guy doesn't need anything. He's got everything he needs. For his soul, of all that he desireth, yet God giveth him not power to eat thereof, but a stranger eateth it. This is vanity, and it is an evil disease. This is what's happened to the guy in Micah. He's got everything he could possibly want, but he doesn't have power to eat it. Some stranger ends up eating it. Maybe he dies early and it gets left to somebody else, right? That happens. Or he gets robbed, he falls on hard times, and he gets really sick and he's got to pay it all out to the hospital, or who knows what. You know, he worked really hard for it and it's all gone. The Lord didn't give him power to eat thereof. So this is how treasures of wickedness profit nothing, because there's a God in heaven, and God, he equals out the balances, right? If you rip somebody off, God's got his finger on the other side of the balance, and he's going to make sure everything gets equaled out. And all of those gains that you got by dishonest means are going to fly away as fast as they came. Now, we're told in Proverbs 15 and verse 6 that the revenues of the wicked bring them trouble, not profit. Proverbs 15 and verse 6. Go ahead and turn there, and I'll give you a verse, and I kind of made reference to this principle. But it's a good one to remember. In Galatians 6 and verse 7, Paul says, be not deceived, God is not mocked, for whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. For he that soweth to his flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption, but he that soweth to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting. So we're not to be deceived, because God's not mocked. Right? When we do something dishonest, even if we get away with it for the time, God is going to make sure that things are all balanced out.
What verse did you say that was?
That was Galatians 6, 7 through 8. So we can take comfort in that, because it can be frustrating sometimes to see people, you know that there's somebody that's dishonest, you know, that people are ripping other people off, and you look at that and you just think, man, they just get away with it. It seems like nothing ever happens to them. You kind of feel like the guy did in Psalm 73, where you just, the wicked are prospering and everything's great for them, and they got no bands in their death, their strength is firm, they're not sick, they lack nothing. But you got to remember that God will repay. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. So Proverbs 15 and verse 6. It says, in the house of the righteous is much treasure, but in the revenues of the wicked is trouble. You see, the revenues of the wicked, the treasures of the wicked, is trouble, not profit. That's pretty much the opposite. And notice it says there, in the house of the righteous there's much treasure. I just think it's interesting. Treasures are in the house of the righteous, not in the heart of the righteous. Because your treasures, your worldly treasures, shouldn't be in your heart. Because where your treasure is, there should your heart be also. And if your treasures, if your worldly treasures are in your heart's in the wrong place. Nothing wrong with having treasures in your house. You don't want to have them in your heart. That shouldn't be the goal of your life, to get wealth. Now, rich men think that their wealth is going to protect them. Their treasures of wickedness, they think it's going to profit them. They think that nothing's ever going to happen to them because of their money. You ever notice how rich people are generally pretty arrogant and cocky? And, you know, I mean, the proverb says that the poor useth entreaties, but the rich answereth roughly. When you're rich and you got a lot of money, you don't have to be nice to people. right? Because it doesn't matter. I got money. I can just, you know, I can get whatever I want. It's kind of like when you're looking for a job and you apply for a job and they call you up for an interview and you're like the nicest person ever and you're so polite and everything and you go in there and you're just trying to be on your absolute best behavior because you need a job and you're really looking for it. But I don't know if you've ever had somebody call you up when you weren't looking for a job, but I've had people call me up. No, I wasn't a jerk, but somebody called me up, found my, you know, email address on a headhunter site or something, and they call me up and say, hey, I got a job. And I'm just like, I don't know, what's it pay? You know, just totally nonchalant. I don't need a job. I don't want a job. All right, I already got one. And just totally cool as a cucumber and asking questions that I'd never ask if I was actually in an interview. And, I mean, this guy's on the edge of his seat like, well, it pays pretty good, you know. I mean, he's like trying to sell it to me because I don't want it. But, boy, if I'd have called up and said, yeah, can I interview? I'll come in any time. I'll be ready. I mean, I'll take, you know, what are you offering? I'll take $10,000 less or whatever. He'd be like, yeah, I don't want this guy. You know, it's kind of funny how that works. It's fun to interview for a job when you don't need one. But anyway, this is rich men. This is why they think their wealth is going to protect them. Proverbs 18 and verse 11 says, the rich man's wealth is a strong city and a high wall in his own conceit. So remember, in these days, the cities were walled, right? And if you had a city that had a high wall around it, this is a defensed, protected city. Somebody that lived inside such a city probably didn't have a lot of worries because, you know, it would take the enemy a long time to breach the wall and to get over it. So the rich man's wealth in his mind is like that strong city. He's sitting there and he's got this big wall of money around him, so to speak, and he has nothing to worry about. He feels safe because if you got money, you don't have many problems. I mean, it introduces new problems in your life, but somebody said it well. If you can write a check to solve a problem, it's not a problem. If you can write a check to solve a problem, it's not a problem. Right? The roof blows off your house. If you can write a check to the contractor for 20 grand to put the roof on your house, you don't have a problem, do you? Your basement starts leaking and you can write a $20,000 check to some contractor to come out here and dig it all around and redo the foundation. It's not a problem. You wreck your car and you can write a check to buy another one. It's not a problem, right? If you can write a check to solve a problem, it's not a problem. Not to mention, a guy like this can pay off people, right? He can pretty much pay anybody to do anything he wants them to. He can pay off judges. He can pay off police officers. He can pay off politicians. Right? I mean, if you got enough money, it's his strong city. He's got nothing to worry about. He's not scared of anything because even if he breaks the law, he's got that covered too. That's why they can be so arrogant and then have nothing, you know, and they keep pushing the limit because they think that nothing's ever going to happen. But riches will not save men. They'll die just like the rest of us. Psalm 49, 6 through 12. Psalm 49, 6 through 12. They that trust in their wealth and boast themselves in the multitude of their riches, none of them can by any means redeem his brother, nor give to God a ransom for him. For the redemption of their soul is precious, and it ceaseth forever. That he should still live forever and not see corruption. We can read that. When I get done here, I'll read that without the parentheses. For he seeth that wise men die, likewise the fool and the brutish person perish, and leave their wealth to others. So it all happens. I mean, the same thing happens to everybody. Whether you're a wicked man, a foolish man, or a wise man, you're going to die. When your appointed time comes, it says that no man hath power over the spirit to retain the spirit, neither hath he power in the day of death, and there is no discharge in that war. God determines that day, and whether you're a fool or a wise man, a wicked man or a saint, it doesn't matter. And guess what? You're going to leave your wealth to others. I was thinking about that. I told Seth this, that we wrote our wills a while ago, and not having children and all that at this time. And right now it's no big deal. It just all go to her. But I think it's one of the hardest decisions I could think of to make of who I would want whatever money I had to go to. Because I would want it to go to somebody that met two criteria. Number one, they were wise, good with money, would appreciate it, would take care of it, would spend it or save, you know, spend it wisely or save it or something. And number two, that they need it. So somebody that is wise and that needs it. But those two things are often mutually exclusive. If you're wise, you don't need it because you already saved up all your money. You already got your money, right? And if you need it, chances are there's a reason for that because you weren't wise. And, you know, so it would be really hard. I think it would be a very hard decision to figure out what to do with it. But anyway, where was I? So they leave their wealth to others. Verse 11, their inward thought is that their houses shall continue forever, and their dwelling places to all generations. They call their lands after their own names. So they think that their houses are going to last forever. Their riches are their strong city. I'm going to be, you know, nothing's ever going to happen to me. Nothing's ever going to happen to my house. My lands are going to be named after my name even when I am gone. Everybody's going to remember me because I was wealthy and rich and, you know, my name lives on, kind of like Trump, you know, putting his name on everything, Trump Tower, Trump whatever. You know, this verse right there fits him to a T, I would say. But he says there that they that trust in their wealth and boast themselves in the multitude of their riches, none of them can by any means redeem his brother nor give to God a ransom for him. Now let's get rid of the parenthetical clause, that he should live forever and not see corruption. You're never going to be able to save you or your brother or anybody else with your riches. You can't take it with you, and you can't buy redemption for anybody. You can't buy masses or get somebody out of purgatory or give to the church and expect that God is going to honor you with, you know, eternal salvation or something like that. It doesn't work. The redemption of their soul is precious and it ceaseth forever. Jesus did it. He said it's finished. That's over. The redemption's done. There's no affecting that either way. So they're going to die like everybody else. Their riches are not going to protect them from death. And in fact, those who trust in their riches will sometimes die earlier than other people as a result of that. And I got a Bible verse, Bible passage here for you in Luke chapter 12, 16 through 21. Luke 12, 16 through 21. And he spake a parable unto them, saying, the ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, what shall I do? Because I have no room where to bestow my fruits. And he said, this will I do. I will pull down my barns and build greater. And there will I bestow all my fruits and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, thou hast much goods laid up for many years. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. He's pretty proud of himself. I've got all this laid up. I've got so much laid up. I need to build, tear down barns and build bigger barns. His wealth is his strong city. He's just going to sit back and relax. Everything's good. He's got nothing to worry about. He's got things laid up for many, many years. But God said unto him, thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. Then whose shall those things be which thou hast provided? The wealth of the sinners laid up for the just, we're told. Who's going to get that stuff? I don't know, somebody. Probably some fool that didn't work for it and is not going to appreciate it. That's what Solomon said. Go read Ecclesiastes. That's one thing that Solomon lamented over and over again. What's going to happen to all my stuff? I amassed all this stuff, and then I'm going to leave it to this guy. And who knows whether he's going to be a wise man or a fool? That's what I was just talking about. I identify with that. God says, you're going to die tonight. You think I got enough saved up to live for another 30 years. I got these barns that are full. I got nothing to worry about.
He had enough for the rest of his life.
He did have enough. Yes, he did. And then some. Yes, he did. But the Lord snuffed him out that night. But you know what his problem was? The next verse tells us what his problem was. His problem was not that he tore down his barns and built greater. You can take comfort in that, Austin. You tore down your garage and built a bigger one.
Stressed out over here.
The problem is not building a bigger one, especially if you let your pastor use the lift. Okay, there's no problem with that at all. Okay, the problem was he wasn't rich toward God. That was his problem, and this is what Jesus says in verse 21. So is he that layeth up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. That was the problem. I think he could have torn down his barns and built bigger ones and filled those things up. And if he took the first fruits of all that stuff and gave it to God, I'm assuming from this passage here, he had been just fine. The Lord wouldn't have took his life, because that's what Jesus said. So is he that layeth up treasure for himself, and is not rich toward God. God was the last thing on his mind. He had amassed this wealth, and he had done all these things, and he could eat, drink, and be merry, right? He was very proud of himself. Little did he know that that wall around his city was made out of sand, and it just crumbled in an instant. And the Lord will destroy the wicked who acquire their wealth unlawfully and trust in their riches. See, they think that they're, you know, that they're going to be protected, but I'm going to show you here in Psalm 52 that that's not the case, especially if you got it ill-gottenly. I don't even know if that's a word. Psalm 52 and verses 1 through 7. Now, you may wonder where this is going, but just wait till we get to verse 7 and you'll see. Psalm 52 and verse 1. He says, "Why boastest thou thyself in mischief, O mighty man?" Mighty men are often the rich men, right? Typically, you don't have a mighty man, it's not a rich man, right? When's the last time you knew a mighty man that was poor? You know, had a lot of weight and influence and control over people, and you know, and then he's saying, "Hey, you got $2, I need a sandwich, I'm kind of hungry," right? I mean, right? People like that typically aren't mighty men, right? "Why boastest thou thyself in mischief, O mighty man?" See, the rich man's boasting, he's proud of his wealth. "The goodness of God endureth continually. Thy tongue deviseth mischiefs like a sharp razor, working deceitfully." This is how he got his riches. "Thou lovest evil more than good, and lying rather than speaking righteousness." Selah. You know, he's the guy that lies to get ahead. He lies. He tells somebody, "Oh, yeah, this car is in great shape. Oh, yeah, I just checked it over." You pull it off the lot, and the thing, you know, it's got sawdust in the transmission or something to keep it going for a few miles before it peters out, right? He lied to get his money. "Thou lovest evil more than good, and lying rather than to speak righteousness, Selah. Thou lovest all devouring words, O thou deceitful tongue. God shall likewise destroy thee forever. He shall take thee away and pluck thee out of thy dwelling place," out of that strong city that he's got built for himself there, "and root thee out of the land of the living, Selah. The righteous shall see it and fear and shall laugh at him. Lo, this is the man that made not God his strength, but trusted in the abundance of his riches, and strengthened himself in his wickedness." You see? That was his problem. He trusted in his riches. He thought he had nothing to worry about. And God said, well, not so. He's going to root him out of the land. He's going to take him out of his house. Now, some people think that, you know, especially prepper types, that gold and silver, that's gonna save us from the wrath to come. And I don't deny that gold and silver will help preserve your wealth, especially in times of high inflation. Absolutely. Right? I mean, if you've been watching the price of gold, you know, I mean, it goes up in times of inflation. So, yeah, certainly it can help. But it's not going to deliver you in the day of the wrath of God. When the last day comes and the heavens are on fire and the whole universe is exploding, that's not going to do you any good. And even in the day of God's severe judgment, it's not going to do you any good either. I mean, if Kansas City gets nuked by some huge nuclear bomb, I don't care how much gold and silver you have in your house. You know, when you're vaporized, you can't really use it. Or when, you know, the whole society is so destroyed that it's probably not going to do you a whole lot of good. Proverbs, I got a bunch of verses on this though. Proverbs 11 and verse 4. I mean, imagine if you were a Ukrainian and you had some foresight and you put a lot of your money in gold and silver, and then in comes the Russian army and just, you got to flee from your house. It's gone. It's not going to save you. It's a good thing to have. I mean, your paper dollars aren't going to save either. You know, better to have the real money than paper. But don't count on it. Don't trust in it. Proverbs 11 and verse 4. It says, riches profit not in the day of wrath, but righteousness delivereth from death. If you're concerned about death, if you're concerned about World War III, or you're concerned about natural disasters and calamities or gangs and violence and, you know, who knows what, whatever you're concerned about, well, don't stock up on riches, stock up on righteousness, because that's what delivers from death. In the same way that God saw the wickedness of the guy, of the people there in Malachi, and then he judged them for it, right? Micah, the one that we looked at earlier. In the same way that God judged him, and he couldn't keep a hold of his riches, and, you know, he's losing it all, and he's being devoured by the sword, and all those kind of things. In the same way that God works against somebody like that, God works for the righteous. So when you practice righteousness, that's what delivers from death. It's because it gets God on your side and he delivers you from death. Look at Ezekiel 7 and verse 19. Ezekiel 7 and verse 19. It says, "They shall cast their silver in the streets, and their gold shall be removed. Their silver and their gold shall not be able to deliver them in the day of the wrath of the Lord. They shall not satisfy their souls, neither fill their bowels, because it is the stumbling block of their iniquity." You think about Jews that lived in Jerusalem before the Babylonians destroyed it or before the Romans destroyed it. Didn't matter how much silver or gold you had, how much money or wealth you had, there's no food to eat. Nobody has anything. And eventually, the enemy breaks in. And they destroy them all. And at that point, throw it on the ground. It doesn't do you any good in the day of wrath, in a serious calamity like that, in a serious judgment of God. Not going to do you any good. As a matter of fact, in 70 AD, the Jews tried to escape the city. They swallowed their gold coins to try to get them out of the city. And the Romans found out somehow about that. And then they started cutting them open. When they found somebody that escaped, they cut their belly open to see if they had any coins in their belly. Think about that. People say, "Well, what good is gold and silver? You can't eat it." Well, you can, but it's not going to do you much good. It's not going to save you in the day of wrath. But, you know, the same thing. "Oh, you can't eat gold and silver." Well, you can't eat paper dollars either. I mean, you know, it's not exactly an argument. But anyway, Zephaniah 1 and verse 18. Zephaniah 1 and verse 18. It says, "Neither their silver nor their gold shall be able to deliver them in the day of the Lord's wrath." I think you're seeing a pattern here. I mean, I'm reading these verses. They're saying the same thing. "But the whole land shall be devoured by the fire of his jealousy, for he shall make even a speedy riddance of all them that dwell in the land." So when you're living through one of those types of judgments of God, riches isn't going to help you at all. And then I got one more for you. James 5, 1 through 3. "And especially if those treasures of, if those treasures were treasures of wickedness, they're not going to profit you. You're going to die just like everybody else." James 5, 1 through 3. James says, "Go to now, ye rich men, weep and howl for your miseries that shall come upon you. Your riches are corrupted, your garments are moth-eaten, your gold and silver is cankered, and the rust of them shall be a witness against you, and shall eat your flesh as it were fire. Ye have heaped treasure together for the last days. Behold, the hire of the laborers." How far was I going to read? Just through verse 3. So these people here apparently thought that they were going, kind of like this guy, you know, that built the bigger barns, that they're going to heap up riches and it's going to save them in the wrath to come. And it's not, James says. He says that your gold and silver is cankered and rusted. Now, I don't believe that's speaking physically. I mean, number one, I mean, I guess God could do anything, but gold and silver, especially gold, does not canker, doesn't rust, it doesn't ever, you know, corrode. He's not talking about physically cankering, and I know that because he says, "And shall eat your flesh as it were fire." Well, if it's physically cankering, it's also physically like eating your body. And the last time I checked, gold coins don't eat your body, right? So he's talking about, you know, they're worthless. cankered, rusted. They're of no value to you anymore. They're not going to save you in the wrath to come. Now, what happens to these treasures of wickedness? They profit nothing. And what happens to them? Well, they get given to the just. Proverbs 13 and verse 22. So it's good, you know, righteousness delivereth from death. It's good to be just. It's good to be on God's side because the rich people can do all the work, all the hard work, and amass all the wealth, and then God can kill them and give it to us. Right? The wealth of the sinner is laid up for the just. It doesn't always happen, but, you know, it does happen. So that's why it's good just to be righteous, just to trust in God, and you'd be surprised at how the Lord can take care of you if you just do what he says and trust in him. Proverbs 13 and verse 22 says, a good man leaveth an inheritance to his children's children, and the wealth of the sinner is laid up for the just. The wealth of the sinner is laid up for the just. There's another place that says that the Lord giveth it to the wealth of the sinner. He giveth it to him that is righteous or just before God. And I can't remember which verse that is. And then the second part of the verse, he says, but righteousness delivereth from death. So treasures of wickedness profit nothing. They're not going to get you anywhere. Your riches aren't going to save you in the day of wrath, and especially treasures of wickedness, they're not even going to profit you before the day of wrath. That's not going to help you. But righteousness delivereth from death. You can see here that the treasures of wickedness are contrasted with righteousness in this verse by the contrasting conjunction, but. So whereas riches gotten by evil means will not profit nor deliver a man in the day of wrath, righteousness will. Proverbs 11 and verse 4. We've already read this verse. I'll read it to you again. Riches profit not in the day of wrath, but righteousness delivereth from death. Same exact phrase as we're looking at here in Proverbs 10:2. Righteousness delivereth from death. The Lord tells us in Psalm 33, in verses 18 through 22, that the righteous who fear and trust God will be delivered from death and kept alive in famine. Psalm 33, 18 through 22. It says, behold, the eye of the Lord is upon them that fear him, upon them that hope in his mercy. Those that fear God and those that have faith in God, that hope in his mercy. To deliver their soul from death and to keep them alive in famine. Our soul waiteth for the Lord, for he is our help and our shield. For our heart shall rejoice in him because we have trusted in his holy name. Let thy mercy, O Lord, be upon us according as we hope in thee. If you want to have the assurance that you'll be delivered from death and kept alive in famine, the verse tells you what to do. Keep your eye on God, fear God, hope in his mercy, wait on the Lord, trust in him, rejoice in him. When you do that, well, those are the kind of people that the Lord delivers from death and keeps alive in famine. And what is all that stuff? But righteousness, fearing God, believing in God, hoping in God. That's what the righteous do. Those are righteous things. And the righteousness will be delivered. Righteousness delivereth from death. We're told in Proverbs 28 that those who trust in their riches will fall, but the righteous will flourish. Proverbs 11 and verse 28. Proverbs 11:28. He that trusteth in his riches shall fall, but the righteous shall flourish as a branch. Flourishing. Living well, growing, prospering, being in good health, having happiness, prosperity, things like that. The righteous shall flourish as a branch. Rather than grasping at the treasures of wickedness, the righteous lay hold on Christ, in which Colossians 2:3 says, in whom are hid all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. You can go ahead and turn there. It's always nice to put your own eyes on the verse. Colossians 2 and verse 3. Speaking of Christ, in whom are hid all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. If you're going to lay up treasure, lay up that treasure. Get the knowledge of God. Lay hold on Christ. Those are the true riches, the true treasures. And those who seek first the kingdom of God and His righteousness will not be destroyed like the wicked who trust in their riches, but will be like a green olive tree flourishing in the house of the Lord. I got three verses for you. And I think that'll probably take care of our study tonight. Matthew chapter 6 and verse 33. Matthew 6:33. This is a verse I'm sure you've heard many times. Should be quite familiar with. Jesus said, "But seek ye first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you." Those things are the things that we eat and that we drink and that we're clothed with and the basic needs of life. He says, when you seek first God's kingdom and His righteousness, all those things will be added to you. If you trust in those riches and in the material things in life, you'll fall. But if you trust in God and seek Him and His righteousness, you'll be delivered from death. That's what it says there. Righteousness delivereth from death. And people like this are not going to be destroyed. People who, like the wicked will be, who trust in their riches. Turn back again to Psalm 52, 5 through 7. I don't know if I read this whole passage or not, but I will read it for you again. Really drive the point home. Psalm 52, verses 5 through 7. God shall likewise destroy thee forever. He shall take thee away and pluck thee out of thy dwelling place and root thee out of the land of the living, Selah. The righteous also shall see and fear and shall laugh at him. Lo, this is the man that made not God his strength, but trusted in the abundance of his riches and strengthened himself in his wickedness. The righteous are going to be provided for. The wicked are going to be destroyed. And it says that the righteous are going to see him and fear and laugh at him and say, hey, this is the guy. He was so proud, so arrogant. I think about the guy that we saw in the video the other day. Good video, J.P. Sears. He's the comedian guy. He did a video on the World Economic Forum, which I don't know how that guy doesn't get banned from YouTube. I don't know how. I mean, I say like 10 words in the middle of a sermon that gets like 50 views, and I get a strike on YouTube. And this guy puts out videos that is completely, I mean, with humor, but completely exposing the World Economic Forum and Klaus Schwab and his ilk. And it seemed like 1.5 million people in a week's time. And it's still out there. It's like, why do they care about me? I got no reach. I've got no influence. I got nothing. It's like, hey, he said something bad about COVID. You know, this guy that nobody listens to. It's weird. I don't understand how it works. But anyway, he was showing clips of Klaus Schwab. He's the leader, the head of the World Economic Forum in Davos. And he's the one, the Great Reset guy. I don't know if you've heard about the Great Reset, but he's been talking about that since right after COVID happened. Anyway, he's got another guy that works for him, kind of like his right-hand man. And this guy is a devil. And they were showing talks. And this guy is saying things that you're not supposed to say. You're supposed to keep him on the inside. You're not, in like closed rooms with no recording. But he's saying it, intending for people to hear it, which is crazy. And he was talking about how they have the technology now to hack every human being and basically to hack into your body and to control you and all these things. And that the future of humanity is going to be intelligent design. It was evolution up until now, but the future of humanity is intelligent design. But not some intelligent design like some guy in the clouds, you know, he says, but we do the intelligent design. I mean, this is absolute evil, arrogance. He's lucky he's not like King Herod when Herod made that great oration and they said it's the voice of a god, not a man, and God struck him dead and made him and had worms eat him up. It's just, it's wickedness. But this guy, someday, whether we're around or not, or we see it from heaven or see it on the last day or whatever, we're going to laugh at him and say, yeah, this guy made not God his strength. This guy trusted in his riches. This guy was so proud and arrogant and thought that he was not under God's control. And he's going to find out. But let's read verses 8 and 9 then. The righteous are going to be like a green olive tree flourishing in the house of God. Verses 8 and 9, Psalm 52, 8 and 9. But I am like a green olive tree in the house of God. I trust in the mercy of God forever and ever. I will praise thee forever because thou hast done it. And I will wait on thy name, for it is good before thy saints. Those that trust in God will be like that green olive tree in the house of God. I think that's interesting. In Romans 11, it talks about the olive tree, and it's symbolic of the New Testament church. And here you got the green olive tree in the house of God. This guy's trusting in God. And when you do that, when you trust in God, you turn over to Psalms, and you delight in God's law, you meditate in it day and night. There in Psalm 1 and verse 2, here's what you'll be like. Verse 3, and he shall be like a tree planted by the rivers of water that bringeth forth his fruit in his season. His leaf also shall not wither, and whatsoever he doeth shall prosper. It says the righteous shall flourish. This is exactly what that's talking about. So, don't trust in your riches. Don't get it by ill-gotten gains. And focus on righteousness, which delivereth from death, and you won't have anything to worry about. And that will take care of our study for tonight.
Just a quick note at the end of the sermon. The most important thing a believer in Jesus Christ can do is to be a member of one of God's true churches. If you're not already a member of one, go to pastorwagner.com/churches to see if there is a true church or other believers of like faith near you. That's pastorwagner.com/churches.